Chicago. Back in the house that he colours after a decade away. Nearly getting it through to Abel Hernandez. Aina. Brzezinski has come over to this right now. Clips one up. It's going! Jared Bowen levels it up for Hull City.
Hello and welcome to another edition of our flashback series, looking back at the decade that was the 2010s. Amazingly, as I was saying just before the episode started, amazingly, we're already up to the 2017-18 season, which feels like just yesterday when we've got players like Jared Bowen running around. Like the audio there was his first City goal against Aston Villa on the opening day. But with me to talk about this this half of the season, I've got Logan. How are you, Logan?
Hey, Alex. Yeah, mate, I'm not doing too badly.
Yeah, happy Easter as well. It's Easter Sunday here where we are. So hopefully all of you listening in have had a good Easter Sunday and you know, tucked into a fair bit of chocolate. But yeah, happy Easter to you, Logan.
Mate, likewise.
Yeah, well let's jump into it. Yeah, look, as I was just saying, kind of incredible to think that this season's approaching sort of seven years ago now, with the emergence of Jared Bowen as a striking option for us. And of course, with Leonard Slutsky as our manager, I had to pick this photo of him at the Hull Fair, which I think to me sort of encapsulates his time as City manager and, you know, the quintessential sort of man of the people, if you like. And it was such a strange managerial appointment in a few ways, in the sense that, so obviously we tried to keep Silver in charge. He then went to Watford after that relegation from the Premier League. Slutsky came in, didn't know a whole lot about him. He'd obviously managed in the Champions League and I think he'd managed Russia as well at that point. Had a good working relationship with Abramovich, so I think the hope was we'd get a bunch of Chelsea players in. And he was just so likeable. And it's just such a shame the way that managerial spell went.
Absolutely. I think, you know, any gaffer who attends the Hull Fair, you know, in the first kind of couple of weeks of his arrival, you know, he's doing the right things to kind of, you know, endear himself to the City fans. And it was just a very, very amusing to see those pictures surface. And I think it, in some ways, is a really kind of accurate metaphor for, you know, his time there as someone who came in and was almost felt like a carnival occasion. Like he wasn't quite known, but everyone was kind of celebrating this new face. Once we got over the initial, you know, heartache of Silver moving on, which, to be fair, I think was painted pretty well. Like, I don't know how much of a real expectation we had that Silver was going to stay on. I think he'd made some comments in the press that were pretty, pretty kind of insightful as far as what we could expect, and so it wasn't a surprise to see him move on. And when Slutsky came in, I think there was this weird air of like, okay, let's get on board with it, but we don't know what we're getting on board with.
Yeah, yeah, and that's, I think, weird. It's a great way to put it, because to me this was a very different sort of context. So when we'd gone down under Bruce, we'd kept Bruce in charge. We kept a lot of the squad together, and it was very much a season of we're going to go straight back up. You know, all systems go. Whereas this one definitely felt like the start of a new era. And it's funny, like having done this sort of decades sort of look back. It almost seems like the decade is split into these three pretty distinct eras, where you've got the first couple of years under, you know, your Nigel Pearson and the sort of the first years at the Alums as, I guess, restoring the club following that Premier League relegation. Then you've got the Bruce era, where we were probably the most successful the club's ever been. And then this era, which, you know, sort of calling it the Bowen era, but he was sort of that quintessential, like that second half or the latter third of the decade was all about Jared Bowen.
Yeah, it really was. And I think maybe the other name that really, you know, pops into my head as well is probably Brzezinski, because I think the combination of those two together kind of, you know, encapsulated where our goals were going to come from. I think, you know, one was scoring, one was setting up. And I think off the top of my head, I don't remember these stats, but I remember it was something ridiculous, like the 19 goal involvements that we'd had at some stage was basically, you know, all down to those two. And so there was a really significant period. I think it was at least a good half a season where, you know, they just played a crucial role in anything good that that City were doing. You could kind of pretty much attribute to those two players. So, yeah, you're right. It really was. To call it the Bowen era, I think is a pretty accurate representation of you know what we were able to get excited about.
And it's pretty remarkable as well. I mean, you talk about Krasicki, and he, of course, was like a £7 million signing for us under Silva, and you kind of expect that holding on to him following relegation, he should perform. But for Jared Bowen to step up as he did, I remember going into this season, and we'd seen sort of glimpses of him in the Premier League the previous season, and we've seen over the years a number of those younger guys come into the team, have a few, you know, Josh Tymon, for example, having a few you know, reasonable appearances and then sort of disappearing again. But going into this preseason, and you know, all the talk was Bowen was going to be this big player for us, and the hopes and pressure are almost being put on his shoulders. As following this relegation, all the players that had left, he was suddenly a mainstay of the first team. And he gets off to the perfect start against Aston Villa, scoring, I think it was his dad's team? I think his dad supported Aston Villa. He was in the crowd for that one, and gets off to the perfect start against Steve Bruce, no less.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I think there was that the famous image of him celebrating over next to his dad, and you know, whether that was something that his dad was stoked about. I imagine one of those life tearing moments, seeing your child score a crucial goal against your boyhood club. But yeah, look, it was fantastic, and I guess like as just to kind of reiterate what you were saying, the amount of players that we do see come with some level of hype behind them and, you know, and show flashes of it and then kind of, you know, vanish into thin air. It happens frequently. And I mean, I think about what we've, you know, what we've seen as City fans, how many times, particularly towards the back end of Premier League seasons where, you know, the season's all but lost. And then the Gaffer will throw on a few random, academy type players and give them a cap. And the fact that Jared Bowen was able to go on it in the fashion that he did, and I guess now, you know, sitting this side of history, we know the player that he's gone on to be for West Ham and, you know, links to potentially bigger clubs, and also just to hear his name constantly touted for the national team, you know, it's truly impressive. And there is an element of that for us as City fans. We are still excited to see, you know, him continue to reach those great heights. Without being too infatuated, I think he was a player that we watched grow up before our very eyes, so to speak. And we're really grateful that, you know, he's copping the plaudits that that he's currently receiving.
Yeah, good timing for this episode. I think he got a goal and an assist last night for West Ham, which, you know, he's sort of, you know, going from strengths to strengths with them. And then just a final word on Slutsky as well. You know, we went on a winless run through October and November. I think it was no win in seven from October through to December, and he was then sacked, or he left the club by mutual consent on the 3rd of December with Adkins appointed pretty quickly. Just touching on, I mean, with Slutsky being such a likable manager, it was a really strange situation in a way, because it felt as if he knew it, the fans knew it, the club knew it, and everyone sort of accepted that it just wasn't working, despite the fact that everyone wanted it to work. I don't think... My memory is there was no point where the fans were chanting for him to go, or there was no animosity towards him. Everyone loved him, but they just knew that it wasn't working.
Yeah, and I think it was largely due to the kind of style that he played. It was incredibly open. if you had to kind of describe it, and you know, it didn't always feel like there was a shortage of goals, but you certainly had no faith that once the ball, you know, found its way into our final third, that we're going to keep anything out. And so, you know, for the exciting patches of football that it did produce, I don't think I've ever felt more vulnerable as a City fan in watching a side try and defend, you know, the barrage that would be coming back the other way.
Yeah, I mean, we'll talk specifically on the games later, but just looking at some of the results, to consider that we had in a single half of a season, a 4-1 win over Burton, a 4-0 win over Bolton, a 6-1 win over Birmingham, and then a 4-1 loss to Sheffield United, a 5-0 loss to Derby. You know, to have all of those results in a single sort of half of a season, you basically, you know, you'd rock up to a game, or you'd switch into a game not knowing, are we going to score five this week or concede five? It was a very wild time. well, we'll talk then. You know, it wasn't just a wild time in terms of results. It was also a wild time in terms of recruitment, as you sort of said earlier, in terms of the changing of the guard. not only did we have a lot of players come in who we'll talk about first, but then also a lot of players who departed the club with sort of the end of that era from a lot of those Bruce signings. But I remember year after year, we'd get these rumours linking us to Fraser Campbell, that, you know, would he return to the club? Would we ever get to see him back in a City shirt? And I think it was Burnsy who broke the news that, you know, years of rumouring, years of sort of speculation finally coming true, and Fraser Campbell was returning to the club. I think it was a free transfer from Crystal Palace. And then a lot of the moves, you know, still looking at some of these players. So Kevin Stewart from Liverpool, Stephen Kingsley from Swansea, basically linked to the deals to send Clucas and Robertson the other way. But outside of that, a lot of the deals were basically, has the player scored a goal against us? Yes. Okay, we'll sign them. So Nua Diko, Jackson Irvine, a few other, you know, few guys like that coming in was quite funny to see.
Yeah, it really was an interesting recruitment period. And obviously, you did mention before the loans from Chelsea as well.
Mm.
I think that was the kind of the thing that signified that period was, you know, in the past when we had, you know, Mike Phelan and the Steve Bruce connection, then we're likely to get ourselves some Man United reserves. And that, you know, that kind of happened. But certainly the connection to Abramovich definitely reigned supreme in this period with the Chelsea loanees as well. So I do remember that being a pivotal part of this time. But looking back now, it's a really interesting transfer window. I mean, you mentioned the Fraser Campbell one. And the fact that he had been, you know, perennially relinked with City, and the, I guess, the air of forgiveness that needed to take place after the, you know, the Cardiff playoff game,
yes,
as well, when he celebrated, or well, so you could count it as a celebration. It was the hand over the mouth,
yeah,
in front of the City faithful. To find a player who has done that and then return to the club it's rather remarkable. Looking at it from this side of time, but I thought Fraser Campbell did a job, to be fair, when he came back. I was
just going
to
say,
with the role that he played in and the age that he was at, to come back and to not necessarily be as revered because of what had happened in the playoff game. It was actually just a season game.
It felt like a playoff game, though. Yeah,
it had the playoff connotations, but yeah, to see him come back and have the influence that he did, you know, it was kind of a very impressive stint when he returned.
Yeah, 18 goals in 75, not bad at all. You sometimes see with those signings, you know, people often say, you know, never go back to a previous club, or, you know, it's never going to be as good the second time around. But I think, for, as you say, for his age and the role that he played in that team, you know, the experienced head, I thought he was certainly very impressive. You can, a little bit different, you compare it to Billy Sharp in the current side, and you think, his contribution, his being Campbell's contributions at the time, were quite significant and would have really helped, you know, Bowen and other younger guys really develop and sort of learn their craft, so to speak. And as you say, I mean, the three Chelsea loanees, I suspect, and I think the cynics at the time would have said, Ehab probably saw Slutsky as a really cheap way into getting some bargains from Chelsea, either on permanence or on loan. And the loans actually did take some time to arrive. And when they did, you know, hindsight says that these guys turned into reasonable players. I mean, Ola Aina's running around for Forest in the Premier League, Tomori playing in Italy and getting England call-ups. But at the time, very raw players, Hector as well. I think Hector, my memory is that Hector actually started really well, and there was a lot of talk on this podcast and other places about looking to get him in on a permanent. And then it all just sort of fell apart, and he just became a really poor defender. But certainly with the other two, or particularly with Aina, I think Aina probably played the most games of the three. You know, I don't think it worked out necessarily as well as Ehab might have hoped.
No, absolutely not. And I don't know if this is a false memory. I'd like to see if you can fact check me on this one, Alex, as well. But was Hector, I say a culprit for, did he get multiple red cards? Was he like a disciplinary? I remember him either accruing a heap of cards and missing matches, or having a couple of significant, I want to say, send offs. Or
he did have one red card for us. So it's not that he didn't have none, but he only had one. He did have four yellows as well. So not a heap of yellow cards, but my memory of him is just being really poor defensively. Like, yeah. I guess he started the season quite well, and we all went, "Oh, look, this is a great potential signing," and then it all sort of fell apart.
And I guess if you think about it too, we had just come through a period where I know we mentioned that Alex Bruce left the club. Mm. We'd had Harry Maguire there. We'd had just a kind of a rich run of defenders. Michael Dawson would have also been there. And so, yeah, Curtis Davies as well, no less. And so I think that would have probably made it extra difficult for us to come to terms with the new defensive breed, given the fact that we had been relatively solid in that area.
Well, yeah, I mean, you say that with Dawson. I mean, this is the weird championship season to me where it was almost – I will talk departures now, so I'll move over to the departures. But I sort of forget that McGregor was our keeper that season. And Dawson actually played 41 games for us as well. Like, he was still there for that whole season. Yeah. I think he departed end of that season. But we still had David – so we had Myler, Dawson and McGregor really as the last three – bastions, I suppose, of that previous era, which to me is kind of funny when you think about it, because you sort of associate this as sort of a, you know, this is more the quote unquote modern City with, you know, your Bowens and your Grzycki and I'm trying to think who else really came in, you know, I guess Kevin Stewart and all those guys who really encapsulated that end of the decade era into that relegation into League One. But there was still a little bit of a crossover with some of those other guys. But certainly, I mean, look, we could have probably two or three slides on departures in that summer. But, you know, Bruce and Josh Tymon were released. Davies and Huddleston were sold to Derby. Maguire got sold to Leicester for $17 million, which was a good fee to receive. And with Jakubovic also going to Leicester, El Mohamedy going to Villa, Robertson going to Liverpool, and then I think Slutsky famously said the shop doors are closed, or, you know, the revolving door is now closed. And then I think even just literally the next day, Klukas went to Swansea. So there was a lot of departures in that summer.
That's right. And I guess another question is, like, how much say did he legitimately have in that, knowing that you know, what the regime was like as a gaffer at City in this time period. But yeah, it is. It's fascinating to see. You know, when we talk about the Jarrod Bowen era, I'm surprised to reflect on how many of those kind of pivotal guys from the, you know, the so-called older playing group were still there. That blows my mind reflecting now.
Mm. Yeah. No, absolutely. I think it's always tough in some ways when you look at, as you say, there with Slutsky, like, not necessarily knowing too much about it. You know, you kind of feel sorry for those managers where clubs probably take a little bit of advantage of them wanting to get into the English game and, you know, basically signing on with a club without really knowing the context or what's going on. And I'm sure he would have come in with sort of assurances that we were going to make a push to get back into the Premier League, and then very quickly would have found that wasn't the case. I mean, look, I'm sure the club brought in those guys like Kevin Stewart and John Terrell's another one as well from Arsenal. If they'd stayed fit, potentially could have been quite good signings for us. But it just felt very scattergun. It felt like the recruitment team had been disassembled, and we were basically saying, well, if we're going to sell Robertson to Liverpool, is there someone that Liverpool will give us back? Going to give Klukas to Swansea? Is there someone they can give us back? And you know, there didn't seem to be a whole lot of structure or sense to that recruitment period, but we'll talk then to finish off about the games in general. And you know, we sort of talk about like the high scoring games and the nature of that first half of the season. The one that I found quite funny in talking about signings and sales was Hernandez staying at the club for that half of the season. I think he got a hat trick against Burton early on in the season before injuring himself, and you can't help but think if he hadn't injured himself, we probably would have sold him in that summer window. I think Ahab was quite frustrated with that injury. But then for us as fans, it actually worked out quite well, because when he came back from injury, we obviously still had him in the side, and he was able to kind of carry on with scoring goals for that season. I think he notched up 8 goals for us in 10 appearances, which was pretty impressive. But, you know, as we sort of touched on before, a very, very, what's the word, sort of, volatile half of the season in terms of goals scored and goals conceded.
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, even mentioning that, hearing the name Hernandez, I was like, wow, Hernandez was still around. And then you mentioned the prolific run that he went on, I was like, that's right, I do recall it. Yeah, fascinating. And I guess that's maybe the harder thing when we think about the playing group, how they kind of go through these eras, if you will. What a change in manager kind of does mean to change in players as well, like the correlation between the amount of outgoings and incomings. It does really take time to get settled. And when you think about these kind of half-baked squads of old guys staying, brand new guys coming in, and low knees as well. Not often is there, particularly in this, you know, in this period, 17-18, was there a lot of permanence being made. It was very much, like we said, you got the Chelsea low knees. And so the difficulty of managing a playing group like that would just be, you know, it's a remarkable situation to find yourself in. And like I said, I liked how you added that. As fans, we were kind of lucky that we got to see more of Hernandez, because he was really one of those cult heroes of that era. And it blows my mind to see that he stayed there longer than many of the other guys too, before eventually getting shipped.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, probably the highlight of that first half of the season, you can't really go past that 6-1 win over Birmingham at home, where I think we had six different scorers. I'm just looking at it now. So Campbell, Myler, Bowen, Grzycki, Henriksen, and Larsen, because of course Henriksen was a bit of a strange one, obviously signing permanently just the January before. And my memory is it mustn't have been this season. It must have been the following season where we triggered that 1-year extension in his deal, thinking we were going to be able to sell him on for a fee, which didn't eventuate. And then we basically didn't want to play him to avoid paying his appearance fee or whatever it was. And he sort of got banished from the team. But he's another one. There's just such a volume of players that sort of passed through the club in that era that you sort of forget about sometimes when you look back on it, which is quite remarkable. But I don't know if there's any sort of games or results that really stick in your memory from that first half of the season.
I'm just trying to remember if this was the exact season. And I feel like that there was a period where I'm sure we won three games in a row, and there was a 2-0 victory over Leeds. Am I thinking the right
season? That might be the following season. Was that when Bowen got the two goals? Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. And that was around the same Christmas period. But yeah, I feel like I've got my seasons mixed up. And
I think they do blend together. Yeah.
The Grzycki and Bowen era, like I said, it really lasted longer than I kind of envisaged that it did. But I remember having kind of almost zero expectations of going up, and then we randomly strung three wins in a row together against like some really quality opposition. And then for a couple of weeks, I remember having inflated hopes, thinking, who knows what could happen here.
And even in this season, we beat Bolton 4-0 the end of August, and we were sitting sixth in the table. And then we did sort of ship a lot of goals. I think after that Bolton win, until the point where Slutsky departed, we only won a further two games, which was, funnily enough, the 6-1 over Birmingham and a 1-0 over Barnsley. So it was a very strange sort of season, because in a way it reminds me a bit of the League One season, of not really having that expectation of going up initially and just sort of waiting to see how the squad settled. And in this case, the squad didn't end up being good enough to succeed in promotion, whereas in the League One season, obviously it did. But it just that sort of first season after relegation of just not really knowing what to expect or how the squad's going to look.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think, look, to answer your question before, I think the 6-1 victory is probably if I can separate the two seasons, it is probably the one that stands out the most. And, a really interesting period reflecting back on it now. And I just I cannot believe that some of the players were still with us for this season.
Yeah. It's one of those ones I think you look back on and you go, in your head, they just don't belong in that sort of era. But there you go. Look, thank you for joining me with this one for a trip down memory lane, Logan.
Yeah, my pleasure.
And thanks, everyone, for listening in. Yeah, this was the first half of the 2017-18 season. We'll be back it might be in the off-season that we'll do the second half of this season, and we'll sort of get towards the end of this decade of flashbacks. But sort of remarkable looking back on the start of Jared Bowen's career in a City shirt and what it entailed, as well as, I guess, the turnover in the squad and the commotion that was that relegation from the Premier League. And I suppose sort of that, you know, unfortunate beginning of a slide towards that relegation to League One, really. But, we're sitting here, you know, in somewhat happier days. So we were sort of talking before the podcast that it's been nice to look back on, you know, 7 years ago rather than dwelling too much on that result against Stoke. But we'll be back next week with our, you know, regular season programming to look back on that one and hopefully a victory over Leeds. But look, until next time, thank you for listening in and come on, City.
You've been listening to the official Hull City Australia podcast, The Tigers Down Under. For more discussion, join us on Facebook at the Hull City AFC Australia Facebook group or follow us on Twitter at Hull City AFC Oz. The music was created by Amber and Black. All the city's on fire, with a burning desire. Tigers are roaring, a destiny's calling, cause now is the time. Yeah, the city's on fire, we're going higher and higher. There's no turning back, cause you're out.